Welcome to the Sum of It All Street Data Podcast. I'm Audrey Mendeville, along with my colleague Mark Alcorn from the San Diego County Office of Education. And this season, we're exploring the book Street Data, a Next Generation Model for Equity, Pedagogy, and School Transformation by Shane Safir and Jamila Dugan. Transcripts to our podcasts are always available for you in the episode notes on your favorite platform. This week, we're wrapping up part four of the book called Transform the Culture. And actually, the book itself, chatting about chapter nine, calling folks in and up to equity, street level conversations.
Well, Audrey, I think let's hang out with that title for a couple of minutes. We haven't done that lately in our episodes. This title is particularly profound, I think. Just this phrase of calling folks in and up to equity versus calling them out. It just makes me think of something we've talked about on our seasons more than once, Audrey, is this idea of language matters. For example, deficit language or any language we use to label kids. We've talked about that in the past and how it's really important to think about the language we're using. So this phrase in street data, in and up versus calling someone out. What comes to mind as we kind of unpack that language, Audrey?
Yeah, I appreciate you just slowing us down for that for a moment. You know, the heading that opens the chapter says every moment is an equity moment. And I think this idea that we're either part of doing better or we're part of the problem is kind of hidden in there. That I think when the authors offer this title, it's to remind us that we need to push each other over and over and over again in and up into this work, because the work isn't easy. It isn't comfortable. Like, given my druthers, I'm going to choose not to, because it's easier to be, that complacency of just saying like, well, it is what it is. We need from each other that space of calling each other into that work. And so I think that segues really nicely for us into the heart of this chapter, which is a provocation around being a warm demander.
Yeah, for sure, Audrey. And we've read a few texts over the last few years that mention this phrase, warm demander. The authors even mentioned Lisa Delpit's definition of a warm demander a warm demander teacher as those who expect a great deal of their students, convince them of their own brilliance, and help them to reach their potential in a disciplined and structured environment. And as you recall, Audrey, in our very first book club that we did with our math leaders here in San Diego, we read Lisa Delpit's book, Multiplication is for White People. And maybe it might be helpful to mention a couple of our takeaways from that book. In fact, she has a whole chapter on the idea of a warm demander. And if it's okay, Audrey, I'm just going to pull a little quote from page 81 in Lisa Delpit's book. And again, the title's Multiplication is for White People. And here's what Lisa Delpit says. What I am saying is that the real concern should be transmitted in the teacher's genuine mode of emotional expression. The point is to make sure the students know that the teacher believes they are capable and expects a lot of them. And I'm thinking about that quote from that other book, Audrey, it's making me think of this idea of like, how does that connect to what we're reading about in street data and really just our overall lens around mathematics with this?
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Well, to go first back to that first, the quote you pulled that the authors offer from Lisa, that warm demanders expect a great deal of their students, convince them of their brilliance, and help them reach their potential. I kind of wonder, and I would love to ask Lisa Delpit if she wrote those pieces in order. Mm. Like, your expectations have to come first. You have to have high expectations first and foremost of all of your students. And then your work is about convincing of them of their brilliance. And then the helping comes at the end. And I'm curious about that because as you're asking about this connection to math class, I think in math classes, we've started in reverse. I think we still do those three things, but I think we do them literally in reverse. I think we start with all the helping. And based on our helping, we look around for brilliance. And based on that, we communicate expectations. So do you see what I'm saying? Like we miss
completely
the point of having it. And I just think maybe we've got it backwards.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point. And also on page 86 in Delpit's book, she mentions that children learn for a teacher more than from a teacher. And they don't want to disappoint a teacher that they feel believes in them. Wow, Audrey, as I'm reading that, so many connections to the current book we're reading with Street Data, and so many thoughts around math practices and attitudes that work against our students knowing we believe in them. Again, I think there's things that are backwards about that. We communicate certain things by the data we value, and we use that data to really against students. And then we kind of try to come around after we bombarded them with that data and say, but I really care about you. after I've given you this marked up test and that, you know, but I really believe in you. So kind of a mixed message there. And then the authors extend the idea in Street Data of this idea of a warm demeanor to leaders. Audrey, this also fits nicely with our primary purpose of this asynchronous book club. Some of our listeners might be aware, we formed this book club as a way to continue a book club with math leaders in San Diego County. So it might be appropriate to consider how we as leaders, as math leaders, could serve as warm demanders of our colleagues in math leadership roles, and also how we can support them to be warm demanders. You know, just a quick thought around this, you know, thinking about which parts of math practice really should be interrupted. I'm thinking here of like static instructional groupings in elementary school, the trauma that can result from time tests and time drills, and how these practices can be interrupted when we consider the value of street data, and it's actually more reliable data. I read something one time around this practice of using a time test with a student, and then when that student was engaged in a type of an empathy interview, the educator was able to find out that the student really was able to show their understanding around multiplication versus the time test atmosphere that actually prevented them from showing what they knew. So all that to say that this idea of street data in mathematics, not only is it necessary, but it actually can be more reliable.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Mark, especially about the reliability of that data. I appreciate your point around the symmetry of design. Again, going back a couple chapters and stealing that phrase from John Mehta and Sarah Fine, that stayed with me again in this chapter, because the question is, are we being warm demanders as leaders, right? Like, are we, to go back to that three-step kind of piece that Lisa offers, do we have high expectations for all of our teachers? Like, can we just stop there? We could stop there and just unpack that for a minute. Do we really believe in their brilliance? And are we helping them find it? You know, is that our work is about helping them to see their brilliance and reaching their potential? And I guess to be like fully transparent and vulnerable in this space, it's that I think as leaders, we are as prone to using the deficit language about teachers that our teachers sometimes use about students. And it communicates that we don't believe they're capable, that we don't believe in their brilliance. And so I think that's just, it was just a moment to pause, like that section where she, where the authors are sharing about this, like this space of symmetry of design. Like, if we don't believe they're capable, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? So I think a lot of this chapter is about resetting some of our leadership stance to really think about how do we situate ourselves as warm demanders.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, on page 200, Audrey, the authors provide some principles that can allow us to think about how we can become warm demanders. You know, what it was sort of the path that we can take. And here are the principles that they provide. The first one is believe in the impossible, build trust, teach self-discipline, and embrace failure. And Audrey, on page 201, under the description of embrace failure, there's some really powerful questions that jumped out at me. And what I'm wondering, and we've done this in the past with books that we've read, I'm wondering if we added math at the end of them, how that might push our thinking, and maybe some of our push our thinking of our listeners that support mathematics. So for example, one of the questions is, what will you do to repair harm with the student and or parent? And I'm thinking if we add it in math class. Another question, what street data strategy will you try this week to deepen your understanding of the student's experience in math class? I just think it just nudges us to just be honest of harm, that even if it's unintentional, harm that could have been caused in our math classes if we don't stop and consider this.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So another one from the leadership side would be, do you believe that every math educator in your building can improve? Mm. What are we doing about that? So I really appreciate it. The authors state these principles are powerful, and then they offer, but what do they look like in action? And I appreciate that you're getting here into the nitty gritty with us, because in math, what does this look like in action? And I really, in math class, in designing math instruction. So on page 202, they offer a warm demander framework that's kind of a compilation of some other resources. And they have these three parts, show strength, listen and affirm, and the last one is challenge and offer choice. I'm hoping we can spend just a couple minutes on each one of those. So what did you think about this space of showing strength?
Well, one of the things that I connected with in this part is that the authors are talking about this idea of showing strength around your line on equity and your vision. And, you know, I think this is really needed in the area of mathematics education. A little later in one of the paragraphs, the authors state, over-communicate your vision so that when a breach happens, you are ready to show your strength. And again, I go back to this idea of a math vision. If, you know, how would that influence how we make decisions, back to this idea of grouping students, maybe back to when I was mentioning the time drills, certainly choosing textbooks, like how do we define our math vision, maybe our math equity vision, and how will that really guide us toward a better end goal?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mark. I think that's what defines a lot of the work that at least I've been doing, I think if you've been doing as well in the last couple of months with our schools. We've been going back and people are asking us to like pull out these older vision statements and can we dust them off and reconsider them and rethink them? Because many times in these conversations, people are saying and remarking, we were doing so good. We were sticking with our vision. And then all of a sudden it becomes that paper that fell underneath the other paper and we forgot to go back to it, right? Or it became too static and it sat on the wall too long and we forgot that it was supposed to be about our work. So I agree. I don't think we can emphasize enough this idea that having a vivid picture of success and communicating that out in each and every decision point along the way is essential for us to move forward as a warm demander.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of one other thing, Audrey. I think that in some circumstances, the work around creating or maintaining a vision around mathematics, I think sometimes there's these little ways to slip out of the work around confronting the harm caused to students in math classes and how we need to interrupt that to realize that vision in which every student is valued, believed in for their brilliance, and has warm demanders guiding them along the way. So I think that having the vision is one thing, but like, is the vision causing us to do the tough work? Or are there little ways we can slip away from having to do that?
I think that's a great point, which leads us into that second part of this framework, which is about listening to yourself, listening and affirming. And the authors say that this is listening to yourself and your body, listening to the nonverbal cues, centering the voices at the margin, and affirming the person's humanity and capacity to grow. What were you thinking about when you read this section, Mark?
Well, this idea of defensiveness is something that really, really resonated with me in this part of the chapter. At the top of page 205, the authors state, by shifting the teacher's response from defensiveness and fragility to listening, I thought was a really, really important thing for us to grapple with. I think there's a lot of defensiveness in mathematics education, especially around equity. I think a lot of educators, or certainly significant group of educators, when we talk to people about their work, they really, really have strong intentions. Many of the people that I talk to have very strong intentions about the work they're doing. And many people, I think, in mathematics have a very strong vision around or belief that, like, I need to help my students that appear to be struggling, and I need to maybe even rescue them. I need to give them the right mathematical thinking because they're off track. And I think that whole line of thought can really position the teacher as somebody that's above the student, that's more important than the student. And I think it really goes against this understanding that our students show up with brilliance. And I think we kind of pile over that brilliance with our long-winded explanations in math classes and our expectations that our students should mimic our long-winded explanations. So I think that we could have good intentions, but I think we need to be open to be pushed on the fact that just because we have good intentions doesn't mean that we're doing right for our students.
Yeah, I hear that. The piece around defensiveness definitely stuck out to me in relationship to mathematics as well. I think about any of the changes that we've begun to see kind of come in waves through how we teach math. Like, there are people who you can see that their hearts are racing, that their fists are clenched, and that, you know, we're moving into a space where we're no longer listening, we're defending, we're fighting. And these tense meetings are about things that, you know, it's just, they're a laundry list. You can pick almost anything that happens in the realm of math. It's about changing whether or not we track students and have different options and pathways for them. It's about, do we have a new class? Is it about, are we really expecting the students to work heterogeneously? It's looking at data and seeing the outcomes that are very clearly show that your success is predicted by your race, the language you speak, whether or not you have an IEP. I mean, we could go on and on and on, and yet not wanting to own it and say we have to do something different. And so I think the ways that we move in this space are really that self-awareness. I appreciate them bringing that up, being self-aware of how our bodies and our dispositions are reacting in the moment, and then choosing listening and curiosity in order to really have those deep conversations that are necessary for us to move forward. To go back to Margaret Healy's work and others, is that we have to choose to listen and be curious about each other. So I appreciated them calling that out. Well, there's one more piece of this framework that they've offered, which is to challenge and offer a choice. Super interesting section. What's resonating with you here?
Yeah, well, you know, they start in 207, just this phrase of, when a person feels seen and heard, something magical happens. And this place where people start to relax a little bit and there's a change in their body language. And this third part of the warm demander framework of challenge and offer a choice, it makes me think back to how we started this episode, Audrey, getting back to that phrase, calling someone in and up versus calling someone out. And how important it is to get to that place of the listening, so now the person is prepared for a challenge and offering a choice. And so what this made me think about, Audrey, is what could be some scenarios that might happen regarding calling colleagues in and up as we engage in the work as math leaders?
Yeah, I appreciate that, because I think one of the things we have to do is we have to practice these difficult conversations, and we have to get used to having them. And so the authors share a series of scenarios beginning on page 211 that offer a chance and some reflective questions ahead of time to kind of think through about how to call in and up instead of out. And, you know, each of these scenarios were really interesting to engage in. You could tweak them and make them a little bit more fitting to your own context. I mean, I could see in each one of these something that I had lived myself. And so I appreciated just how accessible they were to think about in our own context. But I think in that space, when we think about how we get better at it, it really we have to get better at these conversations. We have to get better at taking that breath, slowing our pulse, leaning into curiosity and listening. And that only happens if we continue to try to engage in these with each other. So food for thought there on what to maybe think about trying next with colleagues.
Yeah, for sure, Audrey. Well, as we close this episode, here we are at the end of this book, Street Data, right? I think we could probably do a whole nother episode on closing the book, but as we attempt to do so in just a couple minutes here, one thought does come to my mind. I think what happens in equity work, at least in my experience, that there's this danger of feeling like after I read a book like this, I can't do any of this stuff because it's kind of new to me. So I need to learn more. I need to learn more before I take any kind of action. And I think there's a lot of danger to that. And I think that as I look at some of the work that you and I are engaged in San Diego, I can see some of the ways that the book has already influenced some of our daily work. And I think that it's probably good for us to continue to reflect on that and try to see how that's happening and how we can do better.
Yeah, I think you're right. Those regular reflection spaces are so important. And, you know, one way that we've tried this on is that we've gotten together, the two of us, with some other folks, and we put in these regular conversations that we even name in our calendar as equity chats, that our whole intention in doing this is to, as the authors say, grow a new way of being and learning together. Mm-hmm. That how do we put these tough scenarios in front of each other? And saying, here's something I ran into this week and I didn't handle well. I want to handle it better next time it comes up. Or I'm anticipating this scenario. Can we talk through it together? That all of that work to create that regular reflection space helps us to continue to grow a new way of being and learning together. So such a wonderful book. So much learning already. And I so appreciate that already by the time we're closing out this season, we can look back and already point to so many things that we're already doing differently as a result, not just thinking about. So appreciative for it.
Oh, yeah, me too. Thanks. Well, thanks for joining us for this episode and this season. We look forward to our next book and season with you soon. Until then, send us a tweet with the hashtag SumMathChat. That's hashtag SumMathChat with your questions and thoughts. We'll keep the conversation going there. Until then, best wishes on transforming education.